This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode number 5.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Well, it's quite fitting that my guest today is going to talk to you about branding, because that's something that I've really been grappling with myself this week. I've been putting together a Facebook ad campaign for my new online training program, Soulful PR for Starters. And I found it quite a challenge, even though I've done quite a bit of Facebook advertising before. It has been a challenge for me because I've really been trying to find the right words and the right images that will speak to the people that I really want to work with. And they're small business owners who are taking their first steps generally in PR. They've maybe tried to get journalists interested in their business, maybe not had much success, or maybe they've had a few pieces published, but they've kind of lost their momentum and they want to get back into it. So thinking about the kind of words and phrases and images that would work for them has been very much on my mind over the last few days. And one of the things that my guest said in today's interview, which was, who are you and why would people care? It's so relevant to the things that I've been thinking about over the last few days. So that's really nice for me because it's helped me in lots of ways get really kind of clear on how to go about my own marketing and my own branding. So that's great. And by the way, if you're interested in my Soulful PR for Starters course, you can find out more about it at janetmurray.co.uk/SPR for Starters. So it's janetmurray.co.uk/SPR for Starters. By the time we go live, it will either be available or certainly there'll be a wait list or a sales page there where you can register your interest. So before we start the main part of the show and I introduce you to my guest, who I'm so excited about introducing to you to, I wanted to just ask for your feedback again. I know I've been doing this at the beginning of every episode, but it's so important to me. I'm new to podcasting. I'm not new to PR, but I am new to podcasting. So I'd love your feedback on how I'm doing. So what kind of content you like that I've done so far, what kind of things you want more of, what you'd like less of, any ideas for future episodes or guests. I would absolutely love to hear from you at Jan_Murray on Twitter or Janet Murray UK on Facebook. Or you can drop me a line at janet@janetmurray.co.uk. And if you like the show, I would so appreciate you giving me a review on iTunes, because the more of you that do that, the more people that will get to hear about the show. And I really want to share this content with as many people as I possibly can. So thank you for your support. And if you like the show, I'd love it if you gave me a review over on iTunes. So now let's get on with the main part of the show. So joining me on the show today, I'm just so excited about that. I think I probably say that every episode, but I really am excited today. I have Phil Pallon, who is a brand strategist, and he's going to talk to you about how you can make journalists fall in love with you, which is such a lovely idea. And I met Phil at the New Media Europe conference in Manchester in September, and we hit it off straight away. He's got a great personality and has got a great story as well. So I'm just going to hand straight over to Phil and get him to introduce himself.
Yeah, thank you. You're so right. We did hit it off right away in New Media Europe. I think I went up to you and I was like, I don't even really know you that well, but I like you.
That's
good. Pretty sure that was my first line to you. Because it was true. I could tell right away you were a no bullshitter. And I was like, I like her. No, we got on well. And I think that your style and my style are similar in a lot of ways. My bio on Twitter says, if your baby's ugly, it's my job to tell you. And I did that in the world of branding. I feel like you do that in the world of PR. It's great. I think we're on the same page with a lot of things. I do a few different things as a brand strategist based in Los Angeles, clearly from my accent, not from the UK. Although I wish I was. I definitely try and find as much opportunity to spend time in Europe. But I am based in LA. I do two things. I help people build their brands and I help them promote their brands using intelligent social media strategy. So where I focus a lot on new media and online efforts to promote your brands. I also, doing what I do, working with focusing on personal brands, also have to not just simply ignore some of the traditional methods. And that's actually interesting for me because that's actually how my brand launched a few years ago. Was through
traditional
media.
It'd be great if you could tell us about that, because your career launched, well, it was, like we were talking about just before the interview, traditional media launched your career, didn't it? It's a great story. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, of course I can. It was about 5 years ago. I was finishing up grad school. I had done my undergrad in Canada, which is where I'm from. And then I'd moved to the States for a year to do a year of entertainment business as a focus. And I entered a contest at this time, along with 90,000 people, to be Charlie Sheen's social media intern. This was at the peak of his craziness in the media. So he had certainly mastered traditional media in terms of staying on people's radar in all kinds of crazy ways. And I just thought it would be fun. So a friend introduced me to the idea that this was something that I could enter, along with a lot of other job interviews. So long story short, I entered, and with a simple tweet. I don't remember exactly what the tweet was, but it was literally 140 characters or less. It led to about 5 rounds of this competition. And from 90,000 people, I made it to the top 50, along with a pretty awesome 3 to 4 month campaign to build momentum and get other people on board. I decided from the very beginning of this internship campaign that I never wanted to be one of those desperate people asking their people, you know, asking friends, please vote. You can vote one day on Facebook. I hate that. And I was like, I'm never going to be that person. So I want people to be able to live vicariously through me and feel like it's their internship contest as well. So the contest required us to make one video a week. And instead, I made one video a day. I had a friend that was basically like living with me to help me make videos and come up with concepts. And I just built all kinds of momentum. And I was very lucky that the story got picked up in a very small market back where I did my undergrad in Canada, which I didn't really think anything of. I thought, oh, wow, okay, newspaper wants to cover, feature me, you know, as an alumni. And this is what I'm doing. But this is where I learned. I'm telling you, Janet, I learned more in 4 months of this campaign about media and about PR than I learned in 5 years of university. So story got picked up, small market, which I heard was a good thing. You know, when that happens, if it's a good story, you can expect it to trickle up. And that's exactly what happened.
And when you say small markets, was it a university publication you said, or that picked it up straight away, an alumni publication?
Yeah, it wasn't, but it kind of was. Like, it was that size. It was very small. It was kind of like one of those newspapers that you would find for free,
okay,
you know, at the corner of the intersection. But it was within 1 hour of getting a call from this publication. The Toronto Star then called me, which was obviously much bigger. Toronto Star picked it up, and then it went to the Canadian press, and then it went across the entire country. I had 3 waves of press.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. And I, even by the last wave of press, I was like, wow, I can't believe people still care about this. Because, you know, little things like Canadian press would ask me, so Phil, do you know of any other competitors in this competition? Any other Canadians? And I said, no, as far as I know, I'm the only one. Well, of course there were other Canadians, but no one ever talked about them. It was just me, because I built this campaign. I made it easy for them.
And this
was
all just on the fact that you were taking part, you were trying to be Charlie Sheen's intern or apprentice.
Yes.
And that was the story, basically, that you were trying to do that, and you were making a video every day, and that was their story.
That was the story I built. It wasn't even just that I was doing it. I built a campaign called Tiger Blood Phil.
Right.
That was, the whole thing was Tiger Blood. So I actually had a website that I was updating, tigerbloodphil.com. And yeah, I mean, I did over 100 interviews, TV, radio, print. I wasn't even in Canada when this was happening. I was actually in Florida still finishing up grad school. So I was Skyping in to Entertainment Tonight and Canada and, I mean, all these radio stations. Yeah, I did over 100 interviews total over the course of 3 or 4 months, and all the major ones in Canada and still some in the States as well. I did a few TV shows, radio, print, but definitely for me, more traction in Canada. And my hypothesis is, obviously, Canadians are proud when other Canadians are successful, especially in sports and entertainment. But there's a law in Canada that exists, Canadian content, where 35% of all content on media must be Canadian. So what they were doing was they would talk about Charlie Sheen, and then they would tack me onto the end of the story.
Really? Wow.
You know, for many of them, and it made the story Canadian.
That's really law. 35% has to be about Canada.
Yeah, it's really a law in Canada. Given that we're so close to the U.S., I mean, you look at our media, much of it is American. That's Canada's way of trying to hold on to, well, whatever it means to be Canadian.
And that's fascinating that it's the law, because that kind of goes against the whole idea of the free press, doesn't it, really? But I mean, that's a whole other argument to have. But God, how interesting. So they were kind of using you in the nicest possible way, but it was working for everybody and everybody was happy, presumably, with this arrangement, as it were.
People loved it. Oh, my God. Yeah, like I said, I learned more in trying to figure out what would get them talking and what they would focus on. I learned more by having this practical exercise, and really it did launch my career. I was very lucky because I've always said to people, I never considered myself an entrepreneur. I would have never gone out and started something on my own had I not had the traditional media and the traditional press to reaffirm that I was a, quote, expert in what it is I was doing. I'm 26 now. I was 22 when all of this happened. It was 4 years ago, almost five. And I started a business. I mean, I didn't end up doing any of the internships.
Yeah, what we all want to know is, did Charlie Sheen pick you?
He did not pick me because I actually technically bowed out of the competition. I didn't really, but I accepted another internship. So the Toronto Star actually decided for me that there's a huge headline. I'll send you this image if you want. You can post it with the show notes, but I still have it. I have the image of me scanned from the cover of the Toronto Star entertainment section. Big headline, sorry, Sheen, hello, Seacrest. because I was also up for an internship with Ryan Seacrest. And they actually fired me a week before I was set to start. I moved out to LA, like without a car. So I lived right around the corner from E. I was all set up, had never even been in California my entire life, moved out to LA. And then I got fired because the VP of Ryan Seacrest called me and they were like, Phil, why are you everywhere in the media? Why are you connecting Ryan Seacrest's brand with Charlie Sheen? We have $1 million advertisers on the line. Oh yeah, it was very chaotic and hilarious. I mean, not at the time, I was mortified, but right. I remember crystal clear calling my mom saying, you know, this is going to be funny in a year. It's not funny right now, but 1 year from now, you know.
So you were sacked before you even started.
I was, yeah. The VP called me and said, Ryan isn't happy. I thought to myself, I'm actually secretly excited that Ryan just knows who I am before I moved to LA. So that was my warm welcome to LA. But that I had a few people that called me, one in particular that was like, I've been following you on this crazy internship competition. Do you have any friends by chance that are even remotely like you that I could hire to help me with my social media? And I was like, you can hire me. So
like all good businesses, it started really by accident, as many good businesses do. Wow.
It did. That's it all started. But like I say, I don't often get to tell that story in that detail, but traditional media is what reaffirmed my confidence to do my own thing and not necessarily go work for an agency or, you know, do marketing for someone else. So I'm very grateful for that.
I'm quite curious, what exactly were you posting on this? Is it Tiger Blood site? You said it was called Phil. Mm-hmm.
Tiger Blood Phil. I think I'm sure there must be something still there.
So we can still find it. Well, yeah, but what sort of thing were you posting on there?
It was mostly videos. Oh yeah, the site's down. I do want to like build something to show for this campaign, even though it was ages ago. And I like to think I've moved on beyond this. You know, I will probably put a page of this on my new website, but actually you can go to my YouTube channel and see some of the videos.
Okay, we can link to that. Yeah.
You can link to that. Yeah. And you can see some of the videos that I was making for this contest. Of course, it was 4 years ago, so I look like a child and the content's not exactly relevant now, but you can still kind of see the types of things.
Yeah. And your story is a kind of lesson on PR in itself, because I'm always saying to people all the time that what's your business story? So journalists aren't generally interested in writing about your business, but they're often interested in the story behind your business. And what is your business story? I'm always asking that question to people. And that's far more interesting. So the fact that you have this great business story, this story behind how your business started, is a great PR case study in itself, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I didn't expect it. Obviously, it came out of the blue. But I really, once I got a little taste of the attention, I was like, oh my God, I need to figure out a way to keep them talking about me because it's going to help me. And this is like once in a lifetime opportunity. And I did whatever I could to seize that opportunity. I mean, I became aggressive. I learned what to do and what not to do. I mean, I became a little crazy. I was calling up a radio. This is one of my low moments. I called up a radio station that had been giving coverage to another Canadian candidate. Meanwhile, I had so much press so much more press than anyone else in this competition. But I was like, damn it, they're talking about this girl instead of me. So I called them and I was like, I'd actually won an award in college from this radio station. I was like, you know, here's my story. You should be covering me, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I looked back and I'm like, oh my God, I was a maniac. I was like, calling everyone. And I didn't really need to. I mean, it happened naturally because my story was easier and more interesting to talk about than the other people in the competition.
And it's still got traction. We're still talking about it now. Is it? So the fact it's still got traction now, hasn't it? That story is still relevant and still important now, which is great. And yes. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, it's just such an amazing story, that in itself. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, obviously, you're a brand consultant. And that's one of those kind of terms when people are, okay, well, that sounds interesting, but what do you actually do? And I know when I'm talking to people and I talk about branding, they're often a little bit confused about what branding actually is. And I guess that may well be because there's different definitions of it. But how do you see branding when you're talking to people about branding? What does that mean for you?
Yeah, I face that every single day, the confusion, and that fuels what I do. I mean, I specialize in personal branding, which is a fairly newish concept, right? Certainly it's evolved in the last few years into something. But even when I started living in LA, working with TV hosts and personalities, I was kind of the only guy doing it at the scale and the scope that I was, which was really working on helping people with their brand, building something to show for it, and then helping them promote it, helping them pitch themselves, going to an audition, helping to build an audience online. Now there's a lot of people who do this, but that's really what it is. I mean, for me, my brand is what launched my career. You know, the fact that my brand was exciting enough that people would talk about it in the media helped me get exposure and coverage, and more importantly, gain the confidence to go, wow, I can really, what I just did for myself over the course of this internship competition, I can now do for others. I can help people build a website. I typically work in three stages. I help people position themselves. So we have a meeting, we get together 2 hours, we figure out what's working, what's not. Once you're positioned, or we're, you know, if we're not building a house, we're renovating it, what are some of the changes we need to make? So then we build. So position, build. Sometimes it's from scratch. Sometimes it's a little renovation exercise. You know, if you have your first website, then we figure out what it takes to make it even better in the second or third iteration. So position, build, and then finally promote. After we have something to show for your brand, then I want to make sure people know about it. Typically social media and online marketing, because clients don't come to me with a huge corporate budget. I've never had the luxury of corporate budgets. So it's been a fun challenge. I mean, my clients are individuals, doctors, lawyers, but also entrepreneurs, TV personalities, jewelry designers. I mean, a real range of really marine biologists. And I've worked with such interesting clients, interior designers. I mean, really such a range that I always say to them, it's not my job to be an expert in what you do. You're the expert. I approach it from a user standpoint. How can I craft a memorable first impression and a brand that's going to stand out from everyone else in your field? Visually, proper messaging. I like to think that I build brands that help people get attention, whether it be traditional media or online marketing. I've had clients spokesperson deals, get TV show deals or renewals on contracts because they have an audience. I have a client on a big show in America. She just surpassed 1 million Facebook fans. You know, my first question is always going to be, what's your goal, right? Some people don't care about having an audience. Some people want to, right. You know.
So the kind of brand you build is based around your objective. It's a little bit about that's a bit like if you're going for PR, if you're looking for coverage in newspapers and magazines, the first question I always ask people is, okay, well, what is it you're trying to do here? Who is it you want to reach? And you start with that. And I should say here that Phil has actually worked with me. So, and I had the first stage with him. So that's kind of looking at my house, and I'm now renovating at the moment. In fact, launching this podcast is part of my renovations.
Totally.
And he was fantastic. And just having that kind of clarity, somebody sitting down and even, to be honest, Phil gave me some feedback about what he thought about me when he first met me and how he thought other people saw me, which I found absolutely fascinating, because sometimes we think that people see us a certain way, or we think that people have a certain view of our business and how we work. And sometimes just having somebody give you an objective view will how do you come across? What does your website look to people? How is your brand on social media? Some of that is just so useful in itself. And I know since I met with Phil a few months back that I have made massive changes in my business already just on the feedback that I've already had. So I can certainly vouch for him as a brand strategist. But when we talk about brand, what do we actually mean? Is it about your personality? Is it the way you come across or how people see you? If you had to kind of do a kind of top line on it, a 10-word top line, how would you put it?
Yeah, we're building consistency between the in-person experience and the way we communicate that online. So you're a great example of someone who's taken, I didn't really know you that well, which makes it even better because then I can take inventory of you in person. Or, you know, on Skype, I do a lot of meetings, but I like to be able to see you. I like to be able to just absorb who you are, ideally in person, but that's not always possible. Once I have a clear idea of who you are and how people experience you, some of the nuances of the way you communicate conversationally. I mean, when I'm doing a meeting, I'm always listening for sound bites. A lot of times when you tell me, when you communicate to me what your brand is in a few sentences, those are the little nuggets of gold that should be on the homepage of your website that you so eloquently say in words to a friend that we get it. We get it in one sentence. I'm always trying to distill it down to one sentence, but my job is really to build. I say the best online branding is when we replicate the in-person experience as closely as possible. That's really what motivates everything I do.
That's amazing. And it's interesting, when I met with Phil, he recorded me. And I think one of the first things that I said was something like, there's no nice way of saying this, which I was surprised actually to hear me using. The kind of language that he came back at me with was actually a lot more kind of strong and no nonsense than I thought I was. And actually that has helped me. And I've been a bit more upfront about using that kind of language in my writing and in my branding. And it was really interesting sometimes even just getting that view how other people see you and how you talk about your business. Because I didn't realize I was quite so forthright about
things. You are very assertive and very to the point. And it's one of the reasons that people are drawn to you, because there's a lot of people in PR that just talk nonsense and you deliver it. You know, you're very to the point. Anything you say, I'm going to trust and believe, because you don't just talk, you know, for the sake of talking. That was one thing I mentioned to you that I really, really like about your style. I think people really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it was certainly fascinating for me. And what branding mistakes do you see people making? I mean, again, meeting with you, I was able to immediately pick up some big clangers that I was dropping, which I've either addressed already or I'm working on. What are the sort of most common mistakes you see people making with their branding?
The most common mistakes, I think people don't take advantage of incorporating high quality visuals into their messaging. So when we meet in real life, you know, we're face to face. I have the opportunity to see you, be face to face with you. Take inventory of you. I mean, we look at things, whether you like it or not, we look at things like how you speak, what you wear, your gestures, all of these things. But online, we don't have that luxury of noticing all of these little things. So we have to overcompensate in a way. And one way that is distinct about my approach for branding is really high quality visuals. I say the photographers are the most important people in my business because they give me the tools to be able to build something to show for you that really resonates with people. So I pair high quality visuals, not just your headshot from 2003. I want images of you now. It doesn't mean you need to be a beautiful superstar. It also doesn't mean you need to lose weight. I need to be able to take inventory of you now so that when people meet you in real life, it's a positive experience. Ideally, you know, whatever your goal is, usually it's to increase business. People are going to consume you on your website, get a sense of what you're all about, you know, and then they meet you in real life. If that presence does not reflect you in real life, that's not going to be a positive reaction. People are going to go, "Ooh, you know, you look 30 years older than I thought you were." It's like, I don't want that. This is what I do for a living. So I'm especially sensitive to this. When people meet me in real life, they go, "You're exactly how I thought you would be." And I'm like, that's a compliment, you know, whether you're reading my tweets or you go to my website. I want everything to be consistent because that helps you. Again, it's back to the consistency between in person and online. So visuals.
Okay. One great tip I picked up from you, to actually to fill you in, I heard Phil speak at the New Media Europe conference and his talk was absolutely fantastic. It blew everybody away. But the one takeaway point I had from your talk, I shouldn't call it a talk, I'm kind of doing it down. It was a keynote speech and it was brilliant. It was about visuals and about photography. And when I was talking to other people about your speech afterwards, but that sounds really stuffy, doesn't it, when I say speech? Talk is probably better, isn't it? But when I was talking to people about
everything
talk,
sounds good with your accent. So it doesn't even everything sounds perfect.
So talk. Anyway, so when I was sharing this talk and I said, do you know what? The thing that really struck me was the photography. So you showed some examples of some clients that you'd worked with. And there was one in particular that really stuck in my mind. And it was a guy who was a kind of spiritual leader, sort of I can't remember quite rightly, but it was like a yoga instructor, spiritual leader type person, a bit like Deepak Chopra. That's what it reminded me of. But the first picture that you showed of this guy was he was wearing a grey suit and looked like he was going to work in the city or something like that. And it really didn't reflect at all the kind of work that he did. And then when you got your hands on him and you got your photographers to work with him, then the picture was him kind of like sitting cross-legged in this beautiful sort of grassy area with the sun in the background. And the difference was immediately that picture told a story. That's my very long-winded way of saying that the picture told a story. And so recently, when I've just had some new photos taken, and I'm a bit nervous actually about what you might think of them, but that's what I was trying to...
I love
that. Oh, you like them. Oh, that's good. So I've got a new one. And this is what when I was trying to brief the photographer, who's actually a friend of mine, I was saying, I think what I need to do is tell more of a story in my pictures. I need to tell a story about what I do and what sort of drives me. And she was saying to me, actually, she still thinks that there's more in me and she still thinks that she could get pictures where I am telling more of a story, but I certainly feel happier that I'm kind of getting there. But that was the thing that I really came away with. I was like, right, my photography has to tell a story about me and what I do. Did I get that right, Phil?
Yeah, that's exactly the approach that you want to take. And it doesn't always happen, you know, even the first time you try that. Or also your story evolves and changes. Your brand right now is in a beautiful place where it's evolving. You've got a lot of projects on the go, you know, coming out with courses, stuff like this. So you may even find 6 months down the road, you go, oh, I really need a visual for this. I mean, typically I encourage people map out their website and then identify everywhere that you're going to need visuals and create a little shot list. Okay. So that when you go and do your photo shoot, it's almost like a little checklist. Tick off what you need for each page. And then once you've taken those photos, you know, you've got it. That's often helpful, but also don't be afraid of color. One of my favorite shots, like when I look at your shots that you just did, the one that I'm drawn to that looks very, I would use this and combine it with a logo. It would be a very Phil Palin website, would be the one of you on the blue couch,
right,
hanging out. You've got your magazines, you've got your laptop. To me, that's your winner shot.
Okay.
And I also love the one of you with the couch in the background and flipping through the magazines. Those two shots are my favorite. Yeah, I mean, if they need examples of what I think work well for good branded photography, I always have lots of samples on my website, usually under services, because people often ask this. But yeah, just the shot that looks like I'm there with you. That's what I'm looking for when you go and do a photo shoot.
Yeah. And certainly I've been back and forth on your website when I was commissioning my photographer and I was sort of trying to brief her beforehand. I was back and forth on your website. I was showing her your website.
Cool.
And then saying, look at this one, look at that one. And also, I mean, I made a Pinterest board for her as well with some other images that I saw and I liked. I showed her some photos I really didn't like as well. I mean, I'm not particularly artistic or I'm not sort of good at making my own art, but I think I've got a reasonably good eye for stuff. And design's always been important for me, and I happen to be married to a designer as well, which kind of helps. So I've noticed that on social media, for example, since I've branded my blog post pictures in a certain style, people recognize them and they say, well, you know, we love the style of your blog post images. Where do you get the images from? Who does them for you? And so people, when they see something, they know it's me, which is amazing. And I get the impression that's the kind of thing that you're kind of trying to encourage people to do with their visuals.
Yes, to build your own style, and even better, make sure it's a style that's memorable. I mentioned that to you when we met. I was really impressed with the visuals that you were using in terms of how consistent they are. And I think you're a great example of how what people should strive for in that kind of consistency and build your own system, whether it's a particular app you use or you've got a photographer or designer that you work hand in hand with to make them. people just need to figure out their own workflow. One thing that I also love that you did was we mapped out a little plan for your business.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you, oh my God, you made this beautiful branded version of it. This is what I also liked about meeting with you, is that you actually did what we talked about. So many people, they hire me and it's like, okay, let's come up with some ideas. Then they never do it, or they take them forever to do it. You were like 1 month in and... Or
I'm a girly swap when it comes to stuff like that.
That's what people can learn from you, is actually taking action on these things. But you even take it and took one of our rough kind of business structure plans and made it your own and made it branded. It's amazing. That for me is memorable. I printed it out. I have it on my desk. I love it so much.
I'm just about to share it with one of the clients on my program. And it's probably worth explaining this to you actually, because what Phil encouraged me to do now... I'd never really thought about this in terms of my branding, but one of the first things Phil said to me is that you're doing lots of events, you're doing lots of training, you're doing webinars, you've got online programs, you've got an online program coming out, you want to do a book, you want to do a podcast. But at the moment, things don't kind of fit together. And there isn't a sort of logical sense in terms of, you know, if somebody engages with you on your website, what's the next step for them? If somebody, I've got a free online course on my website, how to write awesome press releases. If somebody does that, what's the next step for them? So he really encouraged me, and I'm actually on the next stage of this on my website. So by the time this goes live, my website might be how you recommended I did it, where we're sort of in the transitional stages at the moment. But he sort of, you know, got me to really think about my products and programs and how they kind of link together. Now, you wouldn't imagine that when you think about branding, you tend to think about photography and image and social media. But actually, the minute I started thinking about my business offers, my offerings, and started to think, well, how do they link together? How do they appeal to people? What's the next step? If somebody does one thing with me, where can they go next? It was really amazing, actually. Suddenly, I started getting all these amazing, like, branding ideas, or amazing kind of creative ideas, just from being, just sort of thinking about, I don't know, where everything sort of slotted in. And that was a real kind of eye-opener for me. And that's something that I've talked a lot. And yeah, as Phil said, I created this pyramid, which actually I can share in the show notes of my products and services. And starting from the free content on my blog, going on to my book, which hopefully will be out by the new year, as a kind of, you know, £10 sort of product, then going on to sort of the paid courses, which are a kind of, you know, the entry level, kind of more sort of couple of hundred dollars, that kind of thing, and then going up from there. And it just helps so much to do that. And yeah, I created this, I got my designers to create this very beautiful pyramid, which everybody seems to like, and I can share it in the show notes actually. And it may change, it may well be that develops, but that was a real kind of light bulb moment for me, that actually branding isn't just about visuals and how you dress and how you talk, it was what you do as well, kind of thing. Sorry, I'm like rambling on about myself there, but have I got that right? Because that was a massive light bulb moment for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point to make, is that it's branding is not just about making things look pretty. It's about actually incorporating your business strategy and the way you communicate what it is you do and why anyone should care. That's always
what
I ask.
So what it is you do and why anyone should care. That's a really, really nice soundbite. So can you give us some examples of some other brands that you worked with that you've taken from that kind of, I don't know, renovation stage where, you know, maybe they've had a website, they've had a brand, but they've needed to kind of, I don't know, as you say, renovate a bit and how they've transformed it. I think you were, when we met, you mentioned there was a singer-songwriter that you met, and I've also gone and looked her up as well. But any examples would be brilliant of people we could go and look up and see how they've transformed their brand.
Yeah, I always have lots of fun examples now that I've been at this for a few years. I'm always really excited about the projects that I have in the works. I don't usually have anything quite to show for those yet because we're in the stages of building, but I always make sure I put those on my website, which is philpallon.co. The one you mentioned is Judy Stakey. She worked in the music business for, oh gosh, almost 30 years as a VP of creative at one of the big record labels, you know, discovered really big artists like Sheryl Crow, Katy Perry, and her brand has been really fun. I mean, she came to me, her brand, or, you know, her website was like a piano. When she came to me and I was like, this is not exciting. It was like a picture of a piano. And I was like, there's just not enough here. I mean, there's so much here with her brand. So she and I mean, we've been working close together now for years. And her website is a great representation of how, you know, my style and how I brand people. But I'm also proud to say that her business has doubled, probably more. And now, you know, where she used to do workshops at home over 8 weeks, now she does weekend workshops and does virtual workshops and speaking engagements and media interviews. And, you know, people take her, she was in People magazine a few months ago, and people take her very seriously, and her branding helps reinforce that. So that's been definitely a journey and a good case study for me.
And that was another example where you didn't just get her to look at her branding, because she's got some amazing photography on her website, hasn't she? Obviously, I've been massively stalking her since we met. But she's got some amazing photography. But also, you got her to change the way she was doing business, because I think I remember you saying to me something like she was charging next to nothing for these kind of courses at her house and getting people along her house at the weekend or something. And basically, you got her to put her prices up and to do like whole weekend courses. And she was making more money in a weekend than she was making in 6 months or something like that. Yes. I seem to remember. But yeah.
Yeah. You remember it. Yeah. I mean, we just reworked how we were. And these are things we learn. You learn as you go. You learn as you do, right? The more important thing than anything else is that you take action. You do it. You move forward with it. And even if it's not perfect, that's fine. The more you do it, same with podcasting or blogging, anything like that, the more you do it, the better you're going to get. And to realize too that your brand is fluid. It's not just something, it's not static. It's not going to stay the same for 5 years in a row. If it does, then we have some concerns, because it should be evolving. So as your brand evolves and you evolve, so should the identity that represents it.
Okay. Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you about really was how this all links into traditional media coverage. So obviously what I do is I help people to get coverage in magazines, newspapers, radio and TV. How does all this sort of branding stuff and online presence and visuals and social media, how does that all kind of link into the more traditional kind of media coverage?
Branding has, when used properly, can be a way to make you and to make your message more memorable. So through visuals and through proper copy and positioning, you can be more attractive than the people who are competing against you for attention, right? Content on the internet is unlimited. It is an unlimited resource. I can go on Google and find the answer to anything. So in my opinion, content is an unlimited resource. Content alone is not going to sell it. So what I believe is the limited resource, the thing that we're all competing for, is time, people's attention span. And so I think to be self-aware, and branding is a great exercise to improve your self-awareness, but to know where you're strong and to know your message and to know you're made up of two things, content and personality. Those are the two magic ingredients that help make a memorable first impression. But like you said, when we, you know, within a few minutes of us chatting, if your story is interesting and worth sharing, then they will. But, you know, journalists aren't necessarily going to talk about you because you want them to talk about you. They're not necessarily going to focus on your business because your business might be boring. But if you've got a really good story and a really good angle that people react well, you know, or you've got a few secret ingredients. I love what you've talked about. I can't remember exactly what the three were. I wrote them down in my notebook.
Oh, yes. My soulful PR principles. So the first one is service. So it's being of service to journalists rather than trying to ram ideas down their throat. The second one is sincerity. So telling stories from the heart rather than kind of trying to manufacture things and kind of struggled with stories. Just kind of, you know, that's why I really encourage people to mine their life for stories and to have that business story. And the last one is simplicity. So just not using 20 words when 5 would do in every kind of context. Yeah. And I think people seem to really identify with that and it seems to resonate with people.
I love that. I mean, I could not agree more with those. Then there was another, I think it was an email that you sent where you mentioned three things that if they have in a story that it's almost guaranteed for success.
It was fear, curiosity, and what's in it for me.
What's in it for me, yeah.
Yeah, so what I believe is that if you go on the BBC website or is it the Toronto Star that you were featured in so heavily, or the New York Times or whatever, then any story that you see on a site like that, and actually even a local newspaper or an industry paper, that it's going to have at least two of those three elements. So the fear, like, oh my God, you know, if I don't eat more apples, I'm going to get cancer. Or if it's the Daily Mail in the UK, eating apples will give you cancer. That will be the story one day. Then curiosity. So things that really kind of like, you know, pique your curiosity, get you interested. There was a story last year, I was speaking at a conference and things were really kicking off in Syria and some terrible atrocities were happening. And the most read story on the BBC was about a goldfish that had a life-saving brain operation. George. And that really tells you all you need to know about what people are interested in. And then finally, the what's in it for me. I think most of us were quite selfish and quite rightly so in what we consume. We read stuff that, you know, it's going to make our day easier or help us in some way or make us laugh or whatever. We don't read stuff because we have to. My editor always says that to me at The Guardian. She always says, people don't have to read this stuff, you know. And I think there's so much truth in that, really. So we're coming up to the end of the interview, and this has just been so great, like, to chat with you like this and to get more of your... It's been really, really brilliant. And if you could leave us with kind of three tips, like three things, I'm really putting you on the spot here, actually, that people could do, very quick things they could do to improve their brand, what would they be? So very quick, easy fixes they could do to improve their brand. They could go and do it now, you know, or tomorrow or something.
Yeah. Even in line with some of the things that you've described, I think first, number one, make sure you have visuals. You have something to show for your brand. Don't just tell us what you do. No one has time to listen to you tell us what to do, because your competition can often show us what they do. And so that's what needs to motivate you. Show us what you do, who you are, through strong visuals. Consolidate your communication. Go through every piece of copy on your website and your social media bios and answer the question, who are you and why should I care? Why should anyone care? Oh my God, when I see someone's bio and it looks like a mini version of the Bible, it's like, what are you thinking? People are in it for themselves and not in it for others. You know, really dial back your copy, because the shorter it is, the more likely people are going to read it. The fewer number of pages you have on your website, the more likely people will go to every single page on your site. And then the third thing I would say is make sure you inject and almost overcompensate with personality and brand voice. That's the missing ingredient. That's the hardest thing to do online. That's the one thing that we get when we get to interact with you in real life. Make sure that you've incorporated your brand voice throughout your stuff as much as possible. And those are three easy, you know, quick changes that you can make today that'll improve your online presence.
That's all brilliant. And there's one last thing, actually. You have a formula for writing Twitter biogs, don't you? Which you, yeah, when you spoke at New Media Europe, you shared with us. Could you share it with us again on the show?
Sure. It's similar to what I've already described in the way of, you know, sentence number one of your social bio. Who are you and why should I care? The second sentence should give me some indication of your personality. So my bio is brand and social media strategist for TV personalities, experts, and businesses. So who am I? Why should you care? Second sentence, if your baby's ugly, it's my job to tell you, which gives you some idea of my sense of humor, mm-hmm, my personality. And more importantly, it starts conversations on Twitter every single day. People will tweet me, oh my God, I love your bio. Oh, that's so funny. Here's a picture of my baby. That has happened.
That's great.
So that's a quick little formula that you can
add. And I should also add that Phil's got a great book called Shut Up and Tweet, which I will link to in the show notes, which he gave me a copy when we met, a signed copy. And I was such a fan by that point that I'd already bought it on Kindle and was halfway through it, because I was such a super fan by that point. And when I heard Phil speak, I said to him afterwards, you know, I didn't want to sound like a bit of a kind of fangirl, but I just heard him speak and was like, I have to work with this guy. I have to get some advice from him. I have to work with him. So what have you got coming up next? What sort of projects have you got coming up? Is there anything you kind of want to share with us that's coming up for you?
Well, I do a little bit of a rebrand every single year. So I usually launch the year with usually an updated site and images. So I just got back from a month in Europe, which is why I was over there. And I spent the rest of the time in Sweden and Denmark. And I got some updated shots while I was there. So my aesthetic will change and evolve a little bit for 2016. You know, I've been so busy now with client work, especially September, October, November. I've got clients that are on TV that need me, you know, with very little notice. So I am trying to up my game on some of my personal projects or my own branded projects. So I do have a podcast. I only have two episodes out, but I will, when the next one goes live, I'm going to commit to doing one every single week. No exceptions. I did it in time to launch at the conference, but that's something. And then people can also find me on Twitter at Phil Palin and connect with me there, where I update people on what I'm doing, which usually involves lots of traveling around the world.
And Phil's brand is just one last thing I want to add. Phil's brand is a treat in itself. So he has these, just go and have a look at his website if you want to kind of, you know, get a sense of how, what great branding is. But he's got even got these cute little things where he puts at the bottom of his emails where it tells you where he is in the world. So he's got these icons. So it says, I'm in London, or I'm in Stockholm, or I'm in LA. And it's just so cute, and it's so consistent and goes right through his brand, which is amazing. So just have a look at his website. Just if you just even want to get inspired, go and have a look at his website, look at some of his clients, and you will be totally inspired. So thank you so much for joining me, Phil. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've just loved the opportunity to kind of pick your brains for even more ideas as well. So personally, it's just been brilliant for me as well, and I really appreciate all the advice you've given me with my brand. And if anyone wants to go and have a look at my website and some of my stuff, you can see Phil's influence there. I've put together a resource for this episode, so a downloadable resource that will kind of bring together some of the ideas and, you know, to help you take some of this forward. And you can get that at janetmurray.co.uk/makejournalistsloveyou. So it's janetmurray.co.uk/makejournalistsloveyou. So that's a downloadable resource, completely free, that will give you some ideas about how you can take some of this stuff forward. And thanks again, Phil. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. You're a great case study to actually show for people that are, you know, to actually make some of those changes happen. So thank you for being so awesome and having me on.
Brilliant. Thank you.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business. Thank you.